We live in an outsource-minded world. We drop our clothes off at the dry cleaner to be cleaned, our car at the repair shop to be fixed, and our children at school to be educated. Or some may think, but classical Christian schools don't work well if parents simply drop and go. Our schools must be collaborative in nature, and this goes from the leadership to the volunteers. And if you're not working in a school, maybe you're curious just how healthy schools should be organized, especially if schools grow from startups to mature organizations. And how do these different ages and stages of the school's growth impact the roles that parents and educators should play? What are the common pitfalls of a growing school that requires extra grace and understanding on everyone's part so that the school will endure and go the distance for our own families and for generations to come? Stay tuned to this episode of Basecamp Live.
Mountains, we all face them as we seek to influence the next generation. Get equipped to conquer the challenges, summit the peak, and shape exceptionally thoughtful, compassionate, and flourishing human beings. We call it Ancient Future Education for Raising the Next Generation. Welcome to Basecamp Live. Now your host, Davies Owens.
Well, it's time for another episode of Basecamp Live. Davies Owens here. I so appreciate you taking the time to listen. Always curious where on the face of the earth you're listening from, as well as what you're doing while you're listening. I still laugh about a comment a listener made a while back about every time I hear your voice, I think of fresh cut grass. I thought that is a weird association unless you consider that he listens to Basecamp Live while cutting the grass. So I'm glad you can be multitasking and productive while listening to this podcast. But no, just curious, info@basecamplive.com. Always good to hear from you. Just let me know where you're listening from, what you're doing, and what's on your mind. Also, would love to know if you have any questions for our friend Keith McCurdy. We're going to be doing another episode in the very near future with Keith, our Christian counselor, marriage and family therapist expert. So anything related to raising the next generation from the school or the family standpoint, Keith's the guy to answer those questions. So email those, info@basecamplive.com. Before we jump into this episode with Dr. David Seibel, I want to say, as always, thank you to the organizations that support Basecamp Live: Classical Academic Press, the Classic Learning Test, the Focus Group, and the Good Agency. As well as for this episode, a special shout out to Hildegard College, Ancient Life Coaching, and Excel College. All of these are fantastic organizations that support classical Christian education in every way. I encourage you to check them out. Dr. David Seibel is a good friend, and he's head of school at the Coram Deo Academy in Carmel, Indiana. David claims his aim is to raise a generation of scholar disciples, I love that, who are passionate about learning. David is married to Brooke, father of two, and has an additional two future Coram Deo students. David recently completed his doctoral of education degree, which is what we're talking about. He did that at Southern Theological Seminary, where he also earned an MDiv. He got a master's from Marion University and a bachelor's in economics and Spanish from Wabash College. He spent a lot of time in school. David attends the Cornerstone Bible Church. So without further ado, let's jump into this conversation with Dr. David Seibel on how a healthy school works. Well, Dr. David Seibel, welcome to Basecamp Live.
Hi, Davies Owens. I praise God for your podcast. I'm glad to be here with you.
It's great to be with you, David. I'm excited about this very important topic. You know, sometimes I think the obvious things aren't so obvious because we don't ever stop and talk about it, but you know, we live in a world where people outsource everything. They drop their car off and they don't really think about what the mechanic's doing. They go to eat at a restaurant. They don't really worry about what's happening in the kitchen. They go to schools. And I think the tendency is, well, hey, I paid a tuition. I dropped my child off and I'll pick them up at 3 and you guys deal with the rest of it. And yet our schools, our classical Christian schools are incredibly critically put together in such a way that we can't be outsourced. We really need to be collaborative and work together. And whether we're a parent or whether we're an educator, help us understand just at a 5 or 10,000 foot perspective, what is a school? How are they organized? Because a lot of folks show up as parents and they're thinking, this is not like my marketplace business I'm running. So how do schools operate and what are some of the challenges you've seen?
Yeah, maybe I'll say two things here. First would be the 60-20-20 rule that I like to share with parents, board members, administrators. And then the other would be more direct answer to the nature of an academy compared to maybe a hospital or a church or a solo entrepreneur. So the 60-20-20 rule is this idea that any parent, any individual in the community of a classical Christian school, 60% of the advice that they give to the school's administration is really helpful. And the administrators should consider implementing it. 20% of the advice that they give is probably irrelevant for the context of a school that handles people's money, their kids, and their religion. And then 20%, if the headmaster or the principal applied the advice from the parent, could actually shut down the school because it doesn't apply at all. A headmaster is part businessman, part educator, part pastor. And so they wear those multiple hats. So it can be confusing to parents, like, how is this school different than my corporate law firm or the church that I minister at or the business that I'm part of? And so we are nonprofits. We have governing boards, but they're not publicly elected officials. They're usually self-perpetuating boards of trustees. So some of these dynamics can be difficult to understand. Most classical Christian schools, they don't have like a parent association that elects the board members. That's not really how most classical Christian schools can be structured yet. So what you see in the news doesn't always help you understand the school that kids go to from a structural perspective.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And most schools are, to your point, you know, board members really only have one employee. It's the head of school. I mean, that's a, you know, it's, I think it was an ISN.
They're the throat to choke, Dave.
Heads are like, great, I don't need any more of that today. Yeah, it's, you're describing the typical profile of a head of school. I'm like, well, Jesus could apply for that, but everyone else is going to be, you know, coming up short. So all the point here is that you've been in school leadership now for how many years? You've been kind of living this thing out.
Yeah, this is my fifth year at the time of this recording as head of school at Coram Deo Academy in Carmel, Indiana.
And so part
of the best places to raise a family, just so you know.
Thank you. I'm sure the Chamber of Commerce will be sending you a little bonus for that. But David, you know, what I love is you're in the trenches. I mean, you're living this thing out. You're seeing these questions. You're seeing parents, you know, come to your school and again, have to communicate, here's how you engage our school within your employees. As you look, and you've been involved kind of nationally with classical Christian schools, all that to say, with all your spare time, you decided to do a doctoral dissertation on this, I think, really critical topic of just how schools are put together, where some of the challenges are that you see globally. So maybe let's just start right there. You know, as you look kind of across this idea of how schools are structured and where they tend to run into some problems, what are some problems that you're seeing universally out there in terms of just school organization?
Yeah, so there was a dissertation done in the maybe 2012, and it showed that the average tenure of a headmaster was less than 3 years, that they didn't have a lot of training. And I thought, well, I'm a new headmaster and I don't have a lot of training and I want to be successful because I love Jesus. I love kids. I was really excited to be part of this movement. And then at the same time, I found out not only was the average tenure of an administrator really short, it was really common that schools couldn't go beyond K-8. They would get stuck. And I was at a school that had just closed their high school. And so the more research I did at the time there, I think there's 525 schools in the ACCS now. Back then it was like 280, and less than 100 of them had a K-12. And I thought there's no such thing as a classical Christian K-8, at least according to my understanding of classical Christian education. I heard Keith Nix say, why would you build a castle foundation and then send them off to another school to put a tent on top of it? And so I just got really passionate about, you know, right now we'll have 10th grade next year. So I just love this idea of let's finish what we've started. So headmaster, tenure, people getting stuck at K-8. And then the last one, I get really excited about this, Davies, would be in the 1900s, the population of the United States exploded. And so they had to figure out how to administer schools. And basically, I think that the former headmaster became a business officer. And I think that could be a threat to our movement. And I feel right now we're going through the planning stages of a capital campaign. We need to raise money for our facilities. The pressures of enrollment, finances, and marketing can really cause the person in charge and the board that's guiding the direction of the school to become pragmatists. And so we wouldn't want the philosophy of John Dewey in the classroom. So why do we allow the philosophy of Descartes and Rousseau and other people in the boardroom and the administration? So I think lots of classical Christian schools have allowed the factory model of education to not impact the classroom, but they've allowed it to impact the boardroom. Yeah. And so I'm really passionate about educating parents, volunteers, administrators, board members, and even business leaders that, hey, let's not let business forces reshape the administration of classical Christian schools. That's what got us here in the first place.
Yeah, that's a great point, David, because I think we're quick to think in terms of our distinctive as classical Christian schools and how we're not like the John Dewey government school down the street. But you're right. I think in your dissertation, you talk about kind of Western management theory where, you know, leadership is one person that sort of towers over everyone kind of running the institution or the factory. And we're inherently different. And if we don't understand
if people want to hear who that is, think of Andrew Carnegie. Mm-hmm. Think of these business titans like Rockefeller that funded educational institutions in the early 1900s. Andrew Carnegie hated classical learning. He thought it produced a distaste. He thought that learning Latin and Greek produced a distaste for a useful, practical life. And so, you know, you could even go back to Lincoln, the Morrill Act, where if you became a vocational technical school, then you could get money from the government. You could get land like Purdue and Indiana and Texas A&M and Texas. But the mission drift usually happens because of money. So sometimes it's death by minnows like Harvard and Yale. But oftentimes, you know, Protestant evangelicals, they didn't have to be threatened. They just needed to be offered money to break their ties to a church or theology. Because the rule in the 1900s was, as long as you're not sectarian, we'll give you money. And so I think that Western individual like Rockefeller, Carnegie, which we get the Carnegie Unit for credits, has had a massive impact on how administrators think about schooling.
So in a very practical way, and I know this is kind of the first big point of your dissertation, is just sort of, we don't have collaborative leadership. We tend to have, again, kind of, you know, rock star on the stage running everything. And we're going to talk later, because one of your really important points is to understand kind of the age and the stage of the school. Obviously, if you're a small startup, you're kind of having to lean in and be very operational. And it's a very different season than it is when you're 15 years down the road. And so that affects it. But I wanted to stay on the point here that you're making, that we tend to unconsciously kind of bring in our assumptions about what leadership looks like, and then what our rules or our role of involvement is. Again, it's not a restaurant. Nobody goes in a restaurant, goes back in the back and helps the chef out. I mean, that would be weird. And we would kind of wait to be served. But you're saying schools are not that way. It's not just sit in the carpool line and that's your contribution or pay your tuition. It's actually come and be collaborative. And so whether you're a teacher or your parent, talk about why collaboration, what did you discover and why is that so important?
Yeah. So I did a series of case studies with schools that were brand new. So I had six case study schools that I followed for a year, and I went and met with their leadership for a day, and they're around the country. The youngest school was brand new, and the oldest school was almost 30 years old and had around 500 students, had their own building, and everywhere in between, K through 8, K through 12. And so it's kind of embarrassing that I devoted all this time to say, the schools that do the best are the ones with the healthiest cultures. Don't just listen to podcasts like this or read my summary. You don't need to read the whole dissertation, but I studied the work of a gentleman named Ichak Adizes, who's well known internationally. He's big in Mexico and in Russia, but he wrote a book called The Ideal Executive, Why You Cannot Be One and What to Do About It. And his basic critique of, I think basically leaders post Rockefeller, Carnegie, I think we've been massively influenced by people like Peter Drucker, who a lot of his principles are based on the manufacturing industry. He even has a book about the ideal executive or the effective executive. So Ichak Adizes basically says, there is no such thing as this ideal executive. And what you find instead is that mature schools, mature organizations, the lead executive is more of a conductor or a synergist. And so I think it's the same thing that Paul talks about in Romans 12, 1 Corinthians 12, that you have, you know, you only have one head. Anything that has two heads should be put on display at a carnival. It's not like the head of school is on one part of the shoulders and then the parents are on the other. I like the phrase that we want to give parents a voice, not a vote. And that might sound mean on the surface, but it's actually, it means that the leadership wants to not pass the buck, that they want to build consensus whenever possible and be consultative. But ultimately, the head is responsible for what happens at the school, and he or she should bear that burden gladly. So yeah, that's a long way of saying that one person can't do it all. They can do it all, maybe up to 50 students, be kind of like a monarch at the beginning. But as the school grows, you kind of transition to being a constitutional monarchy and empowering other leaders and helping people find their best. Yeah. So you could kind of be a barbarian leader in the early years, but as the school grows and you have more programs, you know, I'm constantly running up against my weaknesses as our school grows. So
before we, because there's a lot of ground to cover, it's a big dissertation. And before we take a break, David, maybe just kind of land this point with just some practical examples. So if you had kind of school A on one side of the street, classical Christian school B on the other side of the street, and school A is really doing everything you just described, the barbarian leader, you know, with 50 now has 250, and it's obviously, you know, it's a huge bottleneck, this one person. But school B across the street is really the optimized school. What would that look like? Does that mean they're active volunteers everywhere, that the faculty play different roles? Like, I mean, what would you see in school B and go, okay, that's really collaborative? What would that look like?
Yeah, it's school B. I think that you have a unity of vision, but a division of labor. And so what the school that I observed that appeared to be in the prime stage of the life cycle, it was so funny. You could see the fingerprints of this head of school everywhere, and how her leaders acted, who had all very different styles and personalities, but they had the same core virtues and convictions on how they viewed students, that every child would be known, loved, and challenged, that parents would be not just involved in their child's education, but at seasonally appropriate times, engaged in the running of the school. So usually, you know, once a school hits a certain point, you do have to hire more staff. But I found that a lot of schools are able to keep tuition lower and, you know, run certain programs, whether it be in athletics or arts, because they have parents that are, in some ways, act like staff members as volunteers. So that might not be the perfect fit for every school, but I think the idea of in loco parentis, you can really press into for building programs.
Well, and it sounds like, I mean, another way maybe to say it is really it's a collaborative effort, but it's really a coherent culture. And that when you describe that, you know, every faculty member and parent and head are all basically using same phrases, understand the same goal. I mean, I think clearly an alignment towards a common end is what makes cohesion happen. So it sounds like maybe that's the heart of collaboration. Yeah.
Yeah. Delegation and abdication are not the same. Sometimes we just get excited if parents are physically present in the building, which I rejoice at. But I think some of them, they have some horsepower and can be put to meaningful work and minister to other families. And so you need to train them. It's not wrong to train volunteers.
Well, why don't we take a break and come back on that note? Because I think that's a really important point. I think especially, well, I don't want to, I mean, they're across the board, what are the rules and opportunities for engagement as parents and maybe even as teachers? I mean, is your only role just to come in and teach that one class, or where might you be involved in the broader movement of the school? And I think especially dads are probably the ones that get, you know, hey, write the tuition check and come to the work day. But other than that, not sure where you're going to plug in around here. And it's really unfortunate because we do want to be collaborative and we want to all be kind of rowing in the same direction, so to speak. So, all right, well, let's take a quick break. We'll come right back and continue this great conversation.
Hi, folks. This is Alex Petkus. I'm a former professor of classics, and now I host the Cost of Glory podcast, where I dramatically retell Plutarch's classic, The Parallel Lives of Greeks and Romans. My colleagues and I, though, would like to invite you to join us and other professionals like yourself on a retreat that we are organizing this summer in Rome. It's focused on the ancient art of public speaking and public writing, that is, classical rhetoric. We've both taught this subject at advanced levels in college and used it in our professional careers as entrepreneurs. We also want to show you some of the most interesting sites of the city of Rome, where many great historical acts of public speaking took place. Find out more at ancientlifecoach.com/retreat. And also, you can find us this summer in Dallas at the SCL Summer Conference.
Our promising young people need a new kind of college that cuts through the failings of the mainstream university and challenges them to turn their conviction into action. Introducing Hildegard College, a new classical Christian college that reclaims the fearless pursuit of the good and the true for the leadership and virtue we need for the next generation. Hildegard uniquely combines a classical liberal arts curriculum with an education in entrepreneurship. Our program is focused and affordable, created for young scholars who seek the rigor of classical education and also the practical knowledge they need to put their passion into practice. Hildegard is located in the cultural hub of Costa Mesa, California, and is currently accepting applications for its inaugural freshman class. Learn more at hildegard.college.
David, I know we want to be a collaborative school. I also know that folks are busy, folks are working jobs, many families, both mom and dad are working, and yet we're supposed to kind of be, quote, doing this thing together. So what are just some things you've found both in your research and just your daily operations there in the world of the school that would be practical ways just to help build collaborations? I left it talking about dads in particular, but I mean, moms too. What are you seeing that would be helpful there?
Yeah, two forms of education I would get into here. And I know you've talked about the word paideia or enculturation. So what is that famous quote from G.K. Chesterton? I always say it wrong, that education is the soul of a society.
Yeah, being passed
as
on.
As it passes from one generation to another.
Correct. So yep.
Mm-hmm. I feel like the leadership of the school needs to be more than like org charts and memos and weekly updates. Like you can get lost in the whirlwind of everything that comes from the school. But Charlotte Mason will talk about, and I think we have a shared Charlotte Mason affinity maybe. Or yep. I don't know if we're supposed to talk about that in classical. I'm still trying to.
Hey, I always go back to the old, there was a workshop at ACCS years ago. Do Dorothy and Charlotte get along? I'm like, absolutely they do. So anybody that's out there thinking, Charlotte Mason is just the Chase Butterfly's homeschool lady. Like, no. We need her in all K-12. She's, I think, the missing ingredient in pedagogy. But anyway, well, that's another podcast for another day.
Yeah. We've had on Jason Barney, and he's written about her, helpfully implemented much of her content in our school. But she talks about education being the art of relations between the teacher, the text, and the taught. But I think about the education being, if you're a leader, educational leadership being the art of relationships between the teacher, the text, and the taught's parents, especially when they're little. And so one of the things we do is we have these book groups at Coram Deo Academy that different parents run. And so our rule is that someone that we know has a background in classical, so either myself or administrator, we might have one or two other parents that we would let lead the book group. And they meet once a month, and we're reading Abolition of Man. We've read Athanasius on the Incarnation. And we've read Tim Durnland's book. I know you've had him on, 100 Common Questions. That's kind of our default
mod.
We try to invite, we don't just want to use people for reading groups and field trips. We need that or to help on, if we have a gala, will you be a table host? That stuff's necessary. But more than anything, we want to invest in and educate people. And so.
Yeah. Well, it's so far, what seems to be a really obvious but not so obvious point is we really just need to define the opportunities and rules of engagement. Because when you first walk into the world of classical Christian school, it isn't like the world that your business is being operated in. And we don't always do a good job of saying, here's what collaboration really looks like. And I'm actually, that's a whole nother, yet another podcast just on how we really engage and educate parents. And I've spent some time of late looking at dozens of classical Christian school sites, and 99.9% have really good pre-sales, if you will, information about how to come and be a part of, signing up and enrolling your child. But once you're involved and post-sales for the next 12 and a half years, not a whole lot in terms of what it looks like to be engaged year over year. And so that's again, a longer, deeper area. But maybe, again, because I want to make sure we get to all of this, one of the other I thought highlights of your dissertation was this idea of really knowing the ages and the stages of your school, because to, walk into a school in year one with six courageous families starting it up, that is a totally different set of expectations and obligations than it is once the school is, 5 or 10 years down the road. Talk about understanding what those different seasons are.
Everything has a life cycle in that it's born, grows, ages, dies. We see this with trees. We see this with humans. We also see this with civilizations and societies. So like some of the oldest civilizations on earth would be like Egypt. Oldest institutions on earth would be like the Catholic Church. I know Harvard College was founded in 1646. Yale has been around for hundreds of years as well. But these buildings last so much longer. These institutions last so much longer than the buildings that crumble and the people that move on into eternity. So what is it about things that last? And so we're about that in the classroom. We want to teach kids the ordo amoris, to have rightly ordered affections and love things that last, like pop music. The top 40 is changing constantly, but we serve an immutable, impassable God. And so we want to teach kids to love that which is lovely. And so everything is going through stages. So Ichaka Dizes teaches that there's these stages of growth: courtship, infancy, go-go, adolescence, and prime. And so I've been really interested in accurately describing the stage that a school is in and how they navigate the particular challenges. So I could give like a couple quick access points to help parents and administrators know what stage they're in.
Yeah, that'd be great, David. Go over those one more time, because that's not your normal sort of startup, adolescence, maturity. Those are some unique terms he's come up with.
Yeah, so he uses this mainly for corporations and governments, but I've done this with six schools now, and seven schools, and I think it's a helpful paradigm. It's not perfect, but courtship is like, I think there's been over 300 schools that I'm aware of that have started in the last 2 years, which is just tremendous.
But that's mind-blowing.
Courtship is when
incredible.
Yeah. Courtship is when the baby's in the womb. Like, the school hasn't started yet. So people listening right now might be in courtship because they're kicking around the idea of starting a school, but they're just romancing or dating the idea. They've not yet, they think that, and you might have a miscarriage of that idea. I know that's kind of a crass metaphor, but this is why most businesses fail, is because their courtship, they didn't really plan things out. They never built the crib for the baby and set aside money for the doctor's visits and all that sort of thing. So it's all romance during courtship. But infancy, I have four kids. Two of them are little at home. So I've been in the infancy years for way too long, Davies. But but it's like there's no planning the future. So whenever you talk to a school in their first 5 years, they're usually in infancy. Well, we feel like we're burning people out and we're asking too much of them. Well, it's like, I had twin babies. It's like, we were constantly tired because they needed fed all the time, changed all the time. It's too much work for too few people. That's infancy. And so the reason I think it's helpful if you're a parent at a school that's in infancy is don't place teenage expectations on an infant, but help hold the baby. help go on a field trip. Like, get in and let the parents go on a date. Like, there's things you could do that if a school leader's in their infancy in their career and their school's in their infancy, they don't know what help to ask for yet. But if it's like see a need, meet a need, a lot of our schools, I think our oldest schools are only like in their 30s, right?
That's right.
And so that's a mind
ordering. As a movement, it's shockingly young.
Yeah. And so I think sometimes we compare to our public school experience, which is a government-funded model, so they don't have issues of staffing. It's compulsory education, so it's a totally different set of challenges. I would say the most common application that I've seen for our movement at this current stage is something called the founder's dilemma or the founder's trap, and it's where the people that founded the school are not able to hand over the leadership to administration, or the founding board is not able to roll over to the next generation of parents. So we realized this last year that, this happened with Moses and Joshua in the book of Judges. You have a failed vision transfer. And so you see Moses pass on the baton to Joshua. Joshua enters the promised land, but he doesn't have a successor. And what's after the book of Joshua? It's the book of Judges. You get incredible mission drift from the founding families. And so I think a lot of our schools are going to be entering into this if they haven't already. We're going into our 16th year. We're getting our driver's license as an institution. And I feel like, the families who have been here more than 5 years are now a minority. And so there's a big need for us to constantly be talking about We exist to assist parents in their duty of biblically training their children by offering academic instruction that's distinctly and consistently Christ-centered and classical. Because the second generation never has as deep a convictions as the first generation.
Right.
They have less sweat equity.
And this is, and again, these are not just unique to school issues. It's universal to any kind of institutional build. But certainly, I think you're right that, and I've been a part of Pioneer School startup, and there's a romance to it. I mean, you're part of this, you know, you've got the machete running through the jungle, carving the path. I mean, it's exhausting. It's exciting. I mean, it's all these great things. And all of a sudden you turn around and now somebody's like paved the path through and there's like park benches along the way. And it's just, it's a different reality. And then it's easy, I think, for that first gen to kind of look back and grumble a bit and say, well, you know, nobody gets the vision like we did and things have changed so much. And yet you're right, David. I mean, again, this is a longer topic for another day, but just even at the board level, because boards go from necessity being operational, deep in the weeds, picking curriculum. They really should never do that, but sometimes that happens. And at some point, you got to grow up and be a real board and become a governing board where you're only the only person that you're really overseeing is the head, and the head needs to run the school. And well, I mean, these are like tripwires that I bet 8 out of 10 schools blow up over.
Well, and to the people who have maybe been listening to your podcast for a few years, I think our movement is in its adolescence. So adolescence is when you are trying to figure out your identity, and it's a teenager. So you have some teenagers, right? And so,
yeah, well, they're quickly into young adulthood, but no, you're absolutely right. It's a clumsy age.
You're figuring out who you are apart from your parents. And our movement, regardless of any individual's perspectives, is tied in a lot of ways back to a few locations, one of them being Moscow, Idaho. And so, you know, I've been part of some examination of the book, The Seven Laws of Teaching. And some conversations about Sayers, Stages model. And our movement is, I would not say making obsolete the previous stages, but building upon them. And so we shouldn't look back and be like, oh, Doug Wilson and Dorothy Sayers, they didn't know what they were talking about. We should say, hey, praise God for this pioneer with his machete that was willing to bump the status quo. And now there's new generations of leaders, so there's a greater of diversity of voices within the movement. This happens in literally medicine and law, and everything as it professionalizes, there's more pluralism about what is best. But each individual school needs to figure out how do they fit in and contextualize classical Christian, because we're not making Diet Coke. We're more like starting vineyards, so we have to work with the soil and the climate that we have. And so That metaphor is from Doug Wilson, and I think that you have to figure out, you know, who are the people that God has put in front of me, and what works in the South might not, you know, I'm not a relativist here, but I'm just believing what Aristotle says about practical wisdom. You got to work with the conditions that are around you and still believe in universal.
That's right. Well, I'm really glad you're saying truth. David. That's right. And I think that's this is the prickly, difficult part of the adolescent. You've got acne, you're tripping over your size 13 feet. I mean, it's messy and God is faithful. And I think, again, it's very easy for schools to get frustrated at that point because they're either holding onto the past or there's a fear of change. And so let's clamp down, let's force standards, let's not change. And yet you've got to take into account a changing world. And that's all, again, I think we've come up with about 4 podcast topics, but just looking at the millennials and the Gen Zers that are showing up now as parents, they're in a different world in many ways than the founding parents of the school with their sets of assumptions. So, you know, how do we maintain truth and excellence at the same time be willing to kind of set ourselves in the context of the school in which God's called us to serve? I want to go back again, so many great things in this dissertation, because you also talk about kind of thinking about the first part of our conversation, just assumptions we bring into the school organization. And, you know, thinking about kind of the various professional skills of people who are accountants or attorneys, and, you know, you come into the school and you kind of want to bring that professional expertise. But if you don't understand the frame of the school, it's very easy to try to force systems and structures that maybe are either in the wrong age and stage or just inappropriate altogether. So talk a little bit about that, because I think that's often another tripwire schools run into.
Yeah. I just think it's helpful to be conscious of the stage that your school is in and not to demonize and weaponize people's weaknesses, because it won't help them. And so the you could tell the stage a school is in by the problems they have. So like you said, Davies, your metaphors are perfect. Like the acne and the size 13 shoes. And so it's like our school went from a 25,000 square foot campus sharing on 5 acres to now we have double the square footage and double the acreage. We don't have a facilities guy. We don't have a tech guy. And so I praise God that we have mature families that just want to help. And so but it would be really distressing if they're like, this is wrong and we don't have a plan for X, Y, and Z. It's like, well, we've been here for less than 6 months. We're moving in that direction. But there's so many people are like, I see you moving in that direction. I want to help. And so I think most classical Christian schools have that culture. But, you know, if you see your administrators, we're like another example of a common problem in the life cycle is not knowing who's in charge of what. And so why would they not know who's in charge of what? Is it because the leader is unorganized or afraid of giving assignments? That certainly could be the case. But lots of time, it's just because they're in the growing stages. One of the stages of a disease is called go-go. And it's like a toddler who outgrows their pants, like a little second grader or something who outgrows their pants, you know, every 3 months. And so a lot of our schools blew up after COVID. And so it's like we have this 12-story building on a 3-story foundation. And so I like to think of when your school's moving forward, it's like you're digging for gold, but if you keep digging for gold and you don't rebuild the infrastructure, the mine will collapse on you. Yeah. And I think some schools in the next 3 years, their administrative infrastructure is going to collapse on them unless they retool and re-equip and expand and solidify the foundation. You can't just grow endlessly.
Absolutely. No, you can't. And I think it's, again, we're part of the whole underlying objective of this podcast is to encourage parents, encourage schools. And the last thing we want are for schools to come unraveled. So hopefully, I mean, we're covering all, this is like a whole day seminar of topics we're blasting through here. And in fact, why don't we take a break? Because I want to come back and just kind of tie a bow on some of these things, especially around this idea of how to keep schools synchronized. Because that's what you're saying is as you go through these seasons and stages, you just got to be willing to talk about it. And again, it's so parallel as we keep going back to raising our children. But I see this all the time. You know, fifth grade parents in particular, they will come in and say, oh my goodness, we have bullying in our school now. And oh my goodness, we have all these issues. Like, no, hold on a second. No one told you that sweet little grammar school child is going to get hormones flashing through their body and it's going to cause tension. And like, if we could just get ahead of these things, we can navigate through it. It's natural. It's normal. Growth is hopefully happening, but it can be destructive if it's not best understood. So let's pick that topic up, David, kind of tie this together at the end, because there's a lot of great wisdom that you've come across that I think so many of our schools need to hear. We'll be right back.
At DBU, we believe the future is in God's hands. And our mission is to prepare students to be a light in a dark world. Through a vibrant community of faith, students are encouraged to discover their calling and make it a reality. They are challenged to integrate their faith in all of their studies and throughout their daily lives. They are shaped to become Christ-centered servant leaders whose heart is to transform the world, all for the glory of God. Are you ready for your future? Then let's go.
Do you wonder if the traditional system of higher education is the best way to keep your student on the path to flourishing? Are you tired of having to choose between a solid Christian education and practical, marketable skills? We've got good news. You don't have to settle, and your student doesn't have to make the choice between a solid Christian education and skills development. At Excel College, we've combined a world-class classical Christian education with an apprenticeship model that allows students to gain hands-on experience in the field of their choice while providing them with the context to grow intellectually, spiritually, practically, professionally, and missionally, all the while graduating debt-free. At Excel College, students learn how to build a life, not just make a living. Want to find out more? Sign up for a virtual presentation on our website at www.theexcelcollege.com/visit.
David, David, they call it a dissertation for a reason, because it's huge and it takes a lot of time. And we are just barely getting into this amazing topic. I hope it's been encouraging for those listening, that maybe some of the pain points are just actually growth points. And if you understand how to navigate through them, it's actually a road to even better success in your own family or in your school. So, you know, just thinking about the way schools grow and get out of sync, what are, just kind of by way of parting wisdom, if you had a room full of parents, just what would you say, what's top of your mind of everything we've talked about, just by way of encouragement and how to lean into the school and to be synchronized with it?
Yeah, we are all ticking time bombs if it weren't for Jesus Christ. And so apart from Christ, the wrath of God rests upon all of us. But Jesus is like one of those, it's better to say these men that do this are like Jesus in a small way, but that wear those big like bomb suits that can go disarm a bomb in a precarious situation. I feel like whether it's an educator or a parent, you go through these stages of when you're young, you just care about yourself. And then as you become an adult, you don't need your parents to care for you, and you're able to be responsible. Then you get married and that gets changed a little bit and you start to care for one other person, but you're still kind of selfish, even though you think life is harder. But then you have a child or you have children and you realize, oh, wow, I can care for myself and this individual. But what I've seen happen in both ministry and at the school that I'm at, and in a number of classical Christian schools, is you have these people, whether they're teachers or parents, they take, and Bill St. Cyr at Ambleside used to talk about this, the priest personality, where not only are they able to care for children and other people's children, but they're able to care for adults. And so I think things get out of sync when we go outside of how God has designed things. Christ is the great integrator. He is before all things and holds all things together. And so I think when we say our academies are Christ-centered, there's a real Christ-centered culture and aroma of Christ that we want filling the hallways of the school. And I think there's a way that the degree to which your school is Christ-centered shows when you have problems. Do people handle problems in their flesh? Or do they have like spiritual shock absorbers? And so if someone was like, Dave, you are all over the place, what do I do with this? I would say, be a spiritual shock absorber in your school. There's no way your administration could possibly go about and know everything that's going on with your individual children or every individual class. But if the administration can model what it means to be a contagious Christian, a transforming presence, then that can slowly, by God's grace, spread to other people who say, all right, well, let's get in there and figure out what's going on. We use the 1-3-1 rule. Don't just come to me with one problem. Come to me with one problem, three proposed solutions, and then propose to me what you think the best solution is. And what that shows me is you want to help. Like, you want to sacrifice yourself in order to make the situation better for the good of kids and the glory of God.
That's a beautiful encouragement, David. Again, we started out talking about being in a restaurant. And again, if your food came out and it was a little cold, you probably wouldn't want to go back in the kitchen and offer to help. That would be really weird. But it's the absolute opposite in our schools, where you may be through this. We've been talking about ages and stages. It's obvious you can't show up to startup school and not get pulled into being a part of it. But I do think as schools age into the adolescent, as you're talking about, bring kind of these points together, it'd be very easy when a problem arises to say, well, I'm paying you people to figure that out. How come it hasn't happened yet? As opposed to what you're encouraging is actually to go back in the kitchen and with grace and humility say, hey, I'm here to help. Like, you want me to go chop some carrots in the corner? Like, I will do that because I know this is a huge, overwhelming task, as opposed to pointing fingers and playing cancel culture and all the things that the world so wants us to do when things don't go right. So that's a great encouragement. So
that's what I said at the beginning, the 60-20-20 rule. If you treat this like a client relationship, where your client provider relationship, that's not what in loco parentis is. That's not what Ephesians 6 talks about. That's not what Deuteronomy 6 talks about. The parents are the primary educators. An academy, whether it's 3-day or 5-day, they provide these services from 8 to 3 that are, you know, they're specialized, but they're not trying to, they're trying to supplement what the parents are doing, not supplant it. And so the chef metaphor actually is a false analogy. So logical fallacy, I'm calling you on it, Dave.
Good, I like it. You sound like you're a classical guy.
yeah. And so—
Go ahead, unpack why it is.
Yeah, it's just an equivocation. And so it'd be better if you viewed it, you know, sometimes when people use the metaphor of the family, it can be interesting. But if you were having like a neighborhood pitch-in, like you would bring something to contribute and there would still be a host who takes greater responsibility if it was at their house. And so maybe someone could reach out to us and say, well, Dave Seibel, that was a false analogy. But, you know, we're trying to approximate some illustration of the type of relationship between a school leadership and a parent. But I think the idea is if you have more people that act like priests, that act like Jesus, that act like spiritual shock absorbers, you're going to be able to cover more ground and move through the stages more quickly.
That's great. That's really good wisdom. So bring your potato salad and be ready to contribute is the point there.
Yes,
so,
there you go.
All right. Well, let's, again, final question here. Just thinking about, that was really talking about the parent community. If you are in school leadership or teacher or involved kind of quote behind the scenes, how might this idea of being synchronized, what wisdom would you have of encouragement?
For teachers, you said?
Yes, teachers, administrators. What's the best place for them to
focus on? Yeah. Maybe to teachers, I would say it depends on where you're at in your career. First, just submit your lesson plans and be great at building a classroom culture and delivering the academic content and assessing students. Like do the job. Do the J-O-B, as my dad would say. And then as you, from your excess, from your abundance, as you bubble over, be willing to do 1-3-1 solution offering to administration. Say, hey, I'm willing to help with how we do lunch or how we do recess. I have this idea. I'm willing to do it. That sort of thing can be really helpful if you want to move beyond being a teacher. For administrators, I think there's so many solutions that are available to you that, you know, whether it's coaching through the SCL, through the different services of ACCS, I know classical academic, I feel like there's new things popping up all the time, so if you're an administrator and you're not tithing into your own development, I think that eventually you're going to hit your brake pads and realize you don't have any brake pads left and it's metal on metal. And so I've just been so enriched with relationships with gentlemen like you, Davies, and other people in the movement, just whether it's been formally or informally getting mentored. I every week call people and get advice. And so I know I'm willing to do that. You're willing to do that. But there's such a rich community of people that want to invest in leaders. So find out what's out there and take a step of investing in your own development so you have energy to invest in others, administrators.
Dave, that's great wisdom. And, you know, the blessing of this is that while we're not franchises as much as sometimes I think that would kind of make things easier, we all knew how to, let's all go make waffle fries the same way. I'll teach Latin the same way. The reality is there is a lot. There is nothing new under the sun. So the chances are what your school is experiencing is probably something another school that maybe a little further down the path has gone through. So David, thank you for your research, your observations, your encouragement, because it's sometimes easy to become discouraged as schools go through these different seasons and stages. And obviously,
well, and thank you, Davies, for raising the tide for all our individual ships in the movie.
Well, thanks, David. It's great having you on. Look forward to continuing the conversation. And thanks for your contributions in so many ways to this movement and leading your school. So blessings to you.
Hey there, Basecamp Live listeners. This is Davies' daughter, Hannah, here. And I want to congratulate this amazing podcast on almost 5 years of incredible content, enriching interviews, and over 200 episodes. So that has brought so much encouragement to people. And thank you for being a part of that. Thank you for supporting this message, this mission. And there are a couple ways that you can help in sharing that message. First of all, please leave a 5-star review on whatever app you are using to listen to this podcast. You can also share it with a friend. That's a great way to get the message out about Basecamp Live. And of course, share your story with us at info@basecamplive.com. There we'll also answer all your questions and more. And any topics that you'd like to hear too, please send them there to info@basecamplive.com. We'll see you next week, everybody. Thanks.